decide if this game's going to end here in the 13th. It's up to Todd Frazier.
30 seconds to hit one to win.
Bye-bye.
There it is! The hometown hero!
From the world's most venerable Chicago White Sox blog, delivering news, analysis, history, and some jokes along the way, this is the Southside Sox Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to Southside Sox Live. I'm Josh Nelson, and for the dedicated fans of the podcast, our last show was published this past Monday on December 14th. We hoped that the White Sox would give us a good reason to have an emergency show. Well, it must be the holidays, because White Sox fans were handed a very nice gift in a three-team trade with the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Cincinnati Reds. The Chicago White Sox acquired two-time All-Star third baseman Todd Frazier. With the additions of Alex Avila and Deonaro Navarro at catcher, Brett Lowry now becoming the full-time second baseman, as well as adding Todd Frazier, offensively, this team should be much better. However, is it enough to be taken seriously in the American League Central? Well, to help answer that question, and several more, joining me now is fellow editor at Southside Sox, Patrick Nolan, but we know him in these parts as P-Noles. And P-Noles, thanks for joining me on the live show, buddy.
I'm happy to do it, especially under this, the most favorable of circumstances.
Yes, definitely most favorable. Let's talk about the White Sox and who they got first before we discuss what they gave up. Todd Frazier, without a doubt, is the best third baseman the Sox have had since Joe Creedy. Before making this move, are the White Sox serious contenders now, P-Noles, in the American League Central?
I think they might have a little bit left to go here. I mean, if you take a look at their lineup right now, you know, they still have Tyler Saladino penciled in. You don't know really what you're going to get out of a catcher just because of health reasons. Adam LaRoche, you know, he might bounce back. He might continue to be terrible. Melky Cabrera, you know, who knows? Last season was definitely a down year from him, and there's reasons to think he'll bounce back, but you never know. So there's definitely some gaps around the diamond. Oh, and I didn't even mention the biggest gap of all. Currently penciled in the right field, Avisail Garcia, somebody who's frustrated Sox fans to no end over the course of the past year. So I still look at this lineup, and I don't see a lineup that's very good. I think that they still are short of where they need to be. And fortunately, it seems like quotes from Rick Hahn indicate that they're aware of that, and hopefully they're working on something more to kind of get them over the hump here.
Friend of the podcast and also writer for ESPN.com, Dan Zaborski, tweeted out that Todd Frazier is projected to be worth 3.7 wins in 2016 and 3.2 wins in 2017. Obviously, P-Noles, that's a major upgrade. What the White Sox have gotten, perhaps from the position in a decade, maybe with the exception of Gordon Beckham's 2009 rookie year, and, of course, Joe Creedy in 2006. This is almost a 3-4 win increase from the position at third base. Based on these projections, again, they're projections, so we'll see where Todd Frazier actually ends up at the end of the year and during his play, of course. But as far as these projections, do these make you happy as far as based on what the White Sox gave up to get him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a good deal of surplus value over the last couple of years of the deal there. I know that what the White Sox gave up definitely had value. I don't think I was alone in this, but I think a lot of people imagined that Frankie Montas was going to get dealt one way or another this offseason. And, you know, I'm happy to part with him as the centerpiece of the Frazier deal. He's you know, somebody who I think could be a pretty good reliever. There's still a, you know, some chance that he'll stick as a starter, but I kind of had written him out of my plans for the White Sox future a while ago, so I guess I really wasn't too bummed about that. Micah Johnson, that guy's a zilcheroo. I don't know if he could do anything on the field, and he certainly had no place in the White Sox plan, so that's definitely not a big loss. And you know, the guy that kind of stung a little bit, and I was kind of surprised to see as a name that was included, was Trace Thompson. You know, he's been talked about as a fourth outfielder for a very long time. The second half of last season in the minors particularly, he started to make a lot more contact. That's the major skill that he'd been lacking as he was coming through the system. and you really got a good glimpse of what he could possibly be on the big stage last September, when he basically forced his way into the lineup pretty much every day and was hitting home runs out of the park and hitting for an okay average, showing good plate discipline. So I think that what we saw in September is probably not going to be sustainable, but there's always that chance. And, you know, of the three guys in the deal, I think that he probably stands the best chance to really, make the Sox regret doing this. But that being said, Frazier is a star player. The White Sox will have him for a couple of years on a pretty reasonable deal. So I think that ultimately it was the move they had to make.
Contract-wise, Todd Frazier will be making $7.5 million for the 2016 season. Really cheap for the type of production that he's projected for. In 2017, he's arbitration eligible, and he's also due for a much bigger payday, being arb eligible going into next year. And then finally, he becomes a free agent in 2018 at the age of 32. So unfortunately, Todd Frazier may not see the biggest of paydays like other free agents have seen, especially this past offseason, as he will be leaving his prime as he's entering free agency. So anyways, he's going to be a White Sox for the next two seasons. Lineup-wise, P. Knowles, got to imagine, obviously, Adam Eaton continues to be the batting leadoff for the White Sox. And I think we both agree that Jose Abreu should continue to still be the number two hitter, because it just makes sense to have the best hitter get the most plate appearances, right? And that pretty much ends any argument, I would hope so, from other fans that want him to see batting third or cleanup.
Yeah, I think that it makes probably the most sense for Abreu to bat second. I still think that Robin Ventura probably hasn't given up on the idea that Melky Cabrera is somewhat of a prototypical number two hitter. And my gut tells me that coming out of spring training, he might send Melky back to the two spot just to see if he can hold that down. I think that there's a good chance that you might see Eaton leading off, then Melky batting second, followed by Abreu, and then I'd say, yeah, Todd Frazier at the moment appears to be your cleanup hitter. So that's what I think might happen, but if you want to swap Abreu into the two hole, which I would, and bat Melky third, I think that would probably be a reasonable way to go as well.
I kind of like the idea of having Frazier bat directly behind Abreu.
Yeah, I do too. I think that the math says that, you know, your number three hitter is the least critical of the top five, just because in the first inning he winds up coming to the plate with two out and nobody on pretty often. So that's, I guess, the argument for batting Melky there instead of Frazier. But, you know, if you put Frazier behind Abreu, that gives you a lot of chances for some back-to-back home runs. And obviously Abreu is going to get on base quite a bit. And, you know, to the extent, I don't know, there's a lot of evidence that lineup protection maybe isn't a thing, but for those that like lineup protection, I'm sure that Abreu would probably see better pitches to hit if they know they have to face a guy who hit 35 home runs last year right behind him.
Yeah, that will most definitely help out Jose Abreu. Let's talk about how this trade went down. This afternoon, I got a chance to hop on a conference call with Rick Hahn and other baseball reporters. And despite rumors on Twitter that the Cleveland Indians and Kansas City Royals were hot on the trail for Todd Frazier, Rick Hahn said this on the conference call, quote, "I don't believe everything on Twitter. Didn't believe other teams within the division were also in on Todd Frazier. After acquiring Brett Lowry, we were still engaged in talks with the Reds about Frazier, and last night we were able to make a deal to include Los Angeles." So essentially, this is what I understand of the deal. The Reds did not like the White Sox prospects, but the Reds really like the Dodgers prospects. The Dodgers really like the White Sox prospects. So the Dodgers essentially traded for Todd Frazier, P. Knowles, and because they have Justin Turner at third base, they felt that they didn't need Todd Frazier, so then they traded Todd Frazier to the White Sox for the White Sox prospects, hence the three-team trade.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the way to go. I mentioned something like this on Twitter. Actually, I think it was yesterday, but it seemed like the Reds really wanted to acquire position players. And if what the White Sox, Rick Hahn was kind of sitting there trying to sneak his way into that deal so that he could swing Frazier back then. you know, I guess the Dodgers vision, late inning fireman. And that's a little bit of creative work by Han, and he should be praised for it. I think he did a good job pouncing on the opportunity.
So let's talk about the rest of, well, before we talk about the rest of the offseason, I know you mentioned a little bit prior to Pinholes as far as what the White Sox gave up by trading Micah Johnson, Trace Thompson, and Frankie Montas to the Dodgers. The Dodgers appear to be using Montas as the 7th or 8th inning guy, as that Aroldis Chapman situation with Cincinnati. I have no idea how that's going to end up for the Reds going into 2016. And with Micah Johnson, obviously he'll probably be in the minors, or if he is on the 25-man roster, he's going to be used in pinch running situations. And Trace Thompson suddenly serves as the 4th outfielder for the Dodgers. Does this really impact the White Sox farm system by giving up these three? And do they have enough within the farm system to go out and make another trade?
I think that they do. Unfortunately, I think that for a lot of people, Frank Montas was kind of the ceiling of prospects that most fans were willing to deal. You know, I think that even though they've received sort of similar rankings in a lot of the generally accepted prospect rankings, you know, Frank Montas was not that far away from Fulmer. And I think a lot of people were really hesitant to deal Fulmer and were pretty high on selling Montas before he perhaps revealed that he wasn't fit to be a starter, or, you know, perhaps revealed that maybe he, you know, couldn't harness his stuff and really get that elite command that you see out of elite relievers. You know, as far as what the Sox have left, I think that Micah Johnson's always been a trade chip. It kind of sucks to not have those two arrows in your quiver anymore. And Trace, I never really even thought about as a trade chip. I was super certain that he was going to be on the White Sox opening day 25-man roster. But, you know, they were able to use him, and, you know, they still have some other guys flying around like Spencer Adams. They still have Eric Johnson, and I don't know if there's any guys on the trading block that would be worth dealing with Fulmer or Anderson at this point. But, you know, they certainly do still have, they want to go the trade route. They certainly do have the means to do that. That being said, I feel like at this point they'd probably be better off trying to use money instead to the extent that that's available rather than players.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about what is going to be happening next in the offseason, as obviously White Sox fans are very happy this morning, but they want more. So this morning, Jim Margulis wrote a column reminding us of how poor of a season Avisail Garcia had in 2015. Pinholes, I already know you mentioned that in the beginning of this program. If you didn't get a chance to read it, go to SouthsideSox.com to do so, just to look at the metrics, because they are crazy bad. Anyways, losing Thompson obviously means that the White Sox do need to add another outfielder. You still have Yoenis Cespedes, you still have Justin Upton, and Alex Gordon. They all need homes. And on Twitter, Vincenzo from @BocciOldTown tweeted us, "I think Alex Gordon should be the outfield to acquire. I know he's 32, but he brings something the White Sox don't have. High on base percentage, plus defender." So, Vincenzo, thank you so much for your tweet. And out of those three, Pinholes, if the White Sox were willing to spend the cash, who would you want them to sign?
Well, I think that the guy who would probably rule out is Cespedes, actually. I know that'll make the kind of cause some people to scratch their heads, because I know he's the one who's tied to the isn't tied to a draft pick compensation. Yeah, I just think that he might not be the best risk, just because he's over the age of 30, and he's going to be under control probably for a good 7 years or so, even though he doesn't have draft pick compensation tied to him. You know, Justin Upton is going to be a pretty long deal, but he might have an opt out in there as well. But he's a lot younger, and I think that you're at the very least less of a risk of him falling off the table entirely in the near future. I think Alex Gordon is probably the best risk, because he's, you know, even though he's the oldest of the three, he's probably looking at a shorter deal. It doesn't sound like the market's too hot on him right now. The Kansas City Royals in particular, there's been rumors that their offer to him hasn't been all that aggressive. So it could be a situation where they could pounce on perhaps a slight undervaluing of a player who based on everything I've heard, has just a great workout regimen, and he seems like somebody whose body could hold up as he trucks along into his early to mid-30s. So I think Alex Gordon is a pretty good target and probably the one that I would recommend the White Sox go for at this point.
All right, so other outfielders are also in the mix. I'm undecided because obviously if you sign Alex Gordon, you're going to be giving up the comp pick, but the production you're going to get from Alex Gordon very well could outweigh whatever you would be able to draft with pick 28 in the Major League Baseball draft. Yoenis Cespedes, we hear that name quite often because, yes, he does not require a pick comp. However, because he doesn't require that pick comp, he's the most expensive out of the three. And then there's Justin Upton, which Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt, was on 670 to score today on the Boers and Bernstein show, and he said he had a feeling the White Sox were going to sign Justin Upton. If the White Sox do make that type of a big splash, money-wise, Penals, I know we all want that. Every single sports fan wants to see their team spending the cash on the best players available in free agency. However, bring it down from cloud nine, if the White Sox were to sign either a Upton, Alex Gordon, Yoenis Cespedes, how likely do you see that happening?
For them actually signing one of those players, is what you're asking.
Yeah.
The likelihood of that. Well, got to try to put a number on this. This is tough. I mean, I think it would pretty much defy everything we know about the way that they shop for free agents. But that being said, you know, you do not trade for 2 years of Todd Frazier with the intent of half-assing it. I firmly believe that. And, you know, I know that they've been rumored to be in talks. It sounds to me like the market from other teams is they're not making as strong a push. You know, it seems like the Angels are ruling themselves out. The Cardinals are ruling themselves out. The Orioles seem like they're looking in a different direction entirely. So we could see a situation where the price comes down on at least one of these guys to the point where the White Sox feel like it might be okay to toss their hat into the ring. I am honestly at this point, this might seem crazy high for some people, but I'm pretty 50-50 on it. I think that there's a 50% chance the White Sox land one of those three guys.
Really?
I know. I know it seems crazy.
I think it's just about damn time, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And, you know, it just seems like such a perfect fit at this time to bring in somebody like that. It would be a move that takes them into the conversation being a serious playoff contender. They keep talking about how they have this window and they want to make sure they compete in this window. And I don't see how, you know, acquiring like a second-tier guy really sends that message. I mean, they've seen firsthand how acquiring non-stars in the offseason can really bite you. You know, sometimes you think you're getting a safe guy, and then, you know, Melky Cabrera's defense takes a step back, and he has a bad BABIP year. And Adam, I don't know what happened to Adam LaRoche. That still just puzzles the living hell out of me. But, you know, I think that if they really want to be serious, they need to go for these upper echelon players. And with where their payroll is right now, they could sign one of these guys and still come in under under $140 million. And I don't think that that's such a crazy idea if they find themselves somewhere in the high 130s.
Yeah, revenue-wise, last year the White Sox earned $227 million, according to Forbes. So if they were able to push that number a little bit, as they had about 100,000 more fans after this season, and they were in the $240 million revenue after you think about revenue sharing and the MLB advanced media. If they do go based on that formula where they judge their payroll based on the amount of revenue that they generate, then yeah, they should easily be able to do that as it would fit into their formula. Other outfielders that are available out in free agency, Penals. If you want to move Adam Eaton to left field, you have two center fielder options as well. Dexter Fowler, of course, with the Chicago Cubs, and Denard Span, formerly of the Washington Nationals. These are two other names that fans have brought up. Do you like either of them to join with the White Sox?
No, I like Fowler. He kind of, I feel like Dexter Fowler is the perfect average Major League Baseball player. I think he's the definition of an average regular, and I feel like the team who signs him is going to get a good deal on him. I think that he's going to be a pretty wise investment. Denard Span, there's a lot to like there. He's somebody who's always shown the ability to get on base. I don't know if I'm crazy about him as a center fielder right now, but he's coming off a season where he didn't really get on the field all that much. So I'd say of the two, I would prefer the Sox go for Dexter Fowler. But if you get Fowler, I mean, that's kind of like the half measure that we've been discussing. And I don't know offhand that Fowler turned down a qualifying offer. So he would be, yes. You're talking about a guy like him. That's, that we're talking about where the draft pick compensation starts to become a bigger deal relative to the talent level of the guy you're getting. So I wouldn't be thrilled if they got him. But, at the same time, I think he might be a decent investment.
All right. Some other questions that we got from the text message line from area code 630 texted us. Who is going to be the shortstop now? Both Saladino
Steve and Pierce.
Steve Pierce. Oh, man. You're still on that campaign.
I'm going to be on that campaign until somebody acquires him.
Can Steve Pierce actually play shortstop?
We'll find out.
All right. So who is going to be the shortstop for the White Sox? 630 added in, along with their question, both Saladino and Sanchez show too much to be sent back to AAA. Greatly appreciate it. If you want to send a text message for a future episode of the podcast or one of our live shows, you can do so at 312-870-0224. Keep in mind the text message rates do apply. And, Pino's, right now it appears that you are looking at Tyler Saladino slotted as the shortstop. One of the reporters on the conference call did ask Rick Hahn about that. And Hahn did mention that they believe Sanchez is flexible enough to also play not only at second base, but also at shortstop. And it'll be something that they will dive more in depth during spring training. However, I mean, where's your confidence level? If you're told if this is the team going into 2016 and Tyler Saladino is your starting shortstop, I mean, does that give you a lot of confidence for the White Sox in that position?
It does not, but at the same time, there really isn't a great deal of options available that represent a significant upgrade for a reasonable price. I mean, you could look at maybe bringing in like an Esdrubal Cabrera or bringing back Alexi Ramirez. But at the same time, we're talking about like a 1 to 1.5 win upgrade for pretty much all of the non-Ian Desmond options. And I think that if they leave Saladino as the starting shortstop and they make a serious upgrade in right field and perhaps do something to patch up a rotation depth on the cheap, I think you can live with Saladino as the one, well, I guess besides DH, of course, but, I think you could live with him as a whole. I think he can play the position at a roughly average level in the major leagues. So at least you're not giving much value back defensively. And then you have the possibility that, who knows, and I bet this is something that's in the back of Rick Hahn's mind, is that if Tim Anderson absolutely lights up the minor leagues this year, you might be talking about a situation where you're only looking at really a half season of Saladino. And they might see that as a possible in-house upgrade that they don't even need to pay for. So I'm starting to think it's more and more likely that Saladino is your opening day second shortstop. And I know that that's enough to make some fans' blood curl, and I think maybe mine too, but I think that's what we're looking at.
Gotcha. Do you feel comfortable at all having Carlos Sanchez? I mean, he's had one start. I think his first start ever in the major leagues was filling in for Alexi Ramirez when Ramirez got hurt in Cleveland.
Yes. Yeah, I don't really have a lot of confidence in Sanchez playing shortstop. He's regarded as a good defender at second base, and a lot of the reason for that is how good he is at turning double plays from that direction. A really strong arm for a second baseman, so if you move him to shortstop, obviously the pivot is not really a concern anymore because you're kind of running in the same direction as you're throwing, and his arm no longer plays up like it does for a second baseman. He actually doesn't have the greatest range in the world, and I think that that problem becomes exacerbated when you shift him across second base to shortstop. So I am not crazy about the idea of him being the regular there, because you're probably, in all honesty, looking at a guy who's neither good with the glove nor with the bat, and at least Tyler Saladino could probably be an average glove. So I'd lean more towards Saladino if that's the competition.
Doesn't Sanchez, though, have really good range for a second baseman at that position?
It graded out as a little below average for Fangraphs. Okay. For one season, it's, you know, you never really know how that, you know, what to make of that. Sometimes those things bounce around like crazy, but I think there's a basic like scouting reports and such. And the fact that, you know, in the minor leagues, he kind of took a backseat to playing shortstop for Saladino for a while as well. So I think that's some indication that they felt that his future did not lie at that position.
Let's go to the last statement. Both Saladino and Sanchez showed too much to be sent back to AAA. Do you believe that? Do you believe that Saladino and Sanchez, with the way that the team is currently constructed right now, let's say they even add another outfielder. Let's say they do go add an Alex Gordon. Do you still, I mean, you mentioned that Saladino is more than likely going to be the opening day shortstop, but with Carlos Sanchez, do you still think he has a role on the 25-man roster, or would you prefer him to still get playing time because he's still incredibly young, and send him down to Charlotte to start the year?
Yeah, I think that this is one of my first thoughts after you know, I got all the excitement out of my system with the Frazier trade. I really wondered what this meant for Carlos Sanchez, because he's kind of a square peg as a backup infielder, because like I mentioned, he's a little bit stretched at shortstop. And at that point, you're talking about somebody who's a plus glove at second base. Full disclosure, I have no idea how he would be if they tried to use him at third. That's something that really hasn't crossed my mind before. But, you know, as a utility infielder, you should probably be able to either, you know, do something really well, like hit one-handed pitching particularly well. You should be able to, you know, play shortstop at a, you know, at least a respectable major league level. And I think that Sanchez would probably be notably below average there. So he seems like kind of a square peg right now. I'm almost thinking that this is a precursor to him being involved in some sort of deal. If the White Sox trade for an outfielder, maybe he's a part of that conversation. Or he could be, you know, possibly a move to acquire some relief or starting pitching depth as well. I don't really see a great fit for Sanchez on the roster anymore.
Well, that's one of the few questions we had remaining, coming from Twitter from @LoganHard. And Logan was asking, what do you do with John Danks if Jacob Turner pitches his ass off in spring training? I know you just mentioned that possibly moving Carlos Sanchez Pinoles, the White Sox could acquire another starter or reliever. When Rick Hahn has been asked about Eric Johnson and his future role with the White Sox, if he is slotted already into the starting rotation, Hahn alluded to that he's going to have some competition to be able to earn that spot, and the White Sox have signed Turner to a $1.5 million deal that was for 1 year. And we assumed at that moment it also meant Frankie Montas, but now, obviously, with the trade, he's not included. I don't know how you feel, but I feel like Carson Fulmer is at least a year away before being taken seriously as someone to enter into the starting rotation. I don't know how you feel about Carson Fulmer at this moment.
Yeah, the same. I think he's at least a year away.
Okay. So you're looking at, with the starting rotation right now, of Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Carlos Rodon, John Danks, and then this fifth man competition going on between Eric Johnson and Jacob Turner. So in Logan Hart's situation or scenario, let's say Eric Johnson and Jacob Turner are both great, and then John Danks just does not look good. His velocity's down in spring training. I know sometimes it's often the norm as players get back into their repetition, get back into rhythm. But let's say it's just a really ugly spring training for John Danks. What would you do if you were Rick Hahn and Robin Ventura in that situation?
As long as John Danks is here, he's firmly locked into one of the rotation spots. He's somebody who's actually established himself as a consistent, albeit not great, performer over the last couple of years. He's somebody who they can reliably count on to eat a full season's worth of innings. There's no way that a spring training performance, barring some sort of obvious injury, is going to stop John Danks from taking a rotation spot. And Jacob Turner is certainly no threat to him. I think he's only a mild threat at this point to Eric Johnson. I think that for the most part, everyone feels that Turner's a reclamation project, and I don't think that what he does in spring training is going to convince anybody that he's ready to roll. But, you know, it's one of those things where you never know. I think Eric Johnson's pretty secure in that spot as long as he's with the team. But I just don't see Turner really making a push to make the rotation unless something happens to one of the top five guys.
I figured that Eric Johnson would have been used in acquiring a bat like Todd Frazier, but maybe no other teams like Eric Johnson. As I guess as much as the White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of curious what the White Sox have. Yeah, I mean, I think like it's kind of curious what they've done with him. You know, you're talking about a guy who pretty much led all of AAA in fielding independent pitching last year. And we were a team that had a struggling John Danks in the rotation while we were presumably trying to contend. And for a while, they let that dynamic persist. And, you know, you promote Johnson at the end of the year, and, you know, he does okay. You know, didn't light the world on fire, didn't really embarrass himself either. So I'm wondering if maybe other teams are a little bit cool on him simply because you'd be wondering why a guy has as much seasoning as he does and not really – it hasn't really had much of a shot to really break through with the White Sox rotation. So, you know, I think that the stats and everything look good with Eric Johnson, and everything seemed to be good with the velocity and his pitches this past year. But, you know, that could be a situation where kind of down on him simply because he hasn't really shown what he can do on the big stage yet.
Gotcha. We got another text message in, and I know we talked about this at the beginning of the show, but for those that just tuned in, thank you for doing so. From 803, I actually think with the offensive upgrades at catcher, second base, and third base, we can challenge for the division. I would certainly prefer a big outfield bat, but I think this may be enough to compete. Thoughts? And P-Noles, yeah, a couple of days ago, I went to FanGraphs, and I looked at their projections. And just looked at total war for everything for the team. And the White Sox were in the bottom half. And I expected that. However, wasn't expecting to see the following teams below them. The Royals, the Twins, and the Tigers. Which tells me that the FanGraphs Steamer projections think the White Sox are the second best team before acquiring Todd Frazier. Now, I think that's crazy. I didn't think the White Sox were the second best team in the division. They actually had the Indians as the clear favorite in the American League Central. And honestly, I think the White Sox and Indians are probably the bottom two teams in the division. But what do I know? Probably nothing as far as if I'm making predictions right now. But obviously, you know, acquiring Todd Frazier does definitely change the dynamic. The Indians have a great starting rotation, but they have issues in the outfield with Michael Brantley being out. We've seen the Tigers spend money to get Jordan Zimmermann, and they've made a much better effort to build, I would say, a more competent bullpen to help out in late inning situations. Obviously, the Royals, you know, they made the big trades to get Cueto and Zobrist to help out with the second half and get them a world championship. Those guys are gone. Alex Gordon could also be gone. So they have some holes to patch up. And the Minnesota Twins, we've been seeing this progress. We've been watching their prospects go through the farm system, and here they are. They are now in Minnesota. So based on after this trade of acquiring Todd Frazier, how would you project the American League Central top to bottom, P-Noles?
Oh, geez, that is a really hard question. You know, there's been a lot of pieces moving since the end of the previous season, and the most substantial of those pieces are pieces moving away from the Kansas City Royals, who once again do not look like much coming into the year. But I don't know. It's so hard to count those guys out, especially given what we've seen over the course of the past two seasons. I look at their team and I really don't see a team that's all that strong. I don't know. I'm pretty high on the Indians every year, and I think that I just wind up burning myself for thinking so. But Francisco Lindor looks awesome. He's going to be an anchor of that team for many years to come. They just have some quality controlled pieces all over the diamond, but the whole thing with Michael Brantley kind of scares me a little bit. I honestly do think that the Indians look like the strongest team as of right now. I know that sometimes they call Steamer a little bit crazy because of the weird guys that they tend to put projections in there for to determine these win totals. But to me right now, the Indians seem like the top team. And I say that even knowing that Brantley will probably be out for a good amount of time. Second, I'm probably going with Minnesota. I think that a lot of what they did last year was real. And, you know, a full season of all these players, now that they've had some experience under their belt, I think that they'll be able to make a pretty big impact. You know, they've had a strong lineup for a couple of years now. And I think that as soon as they find some starters that can really stick, that they'll be a pretty strong team. Probably in third right now, I would say, are the White Sox after the Frazier trade. Obviously, we have the rotation to love. The bullpen should be decent. And, you know, having another bat in the middle of the order is, you know, leaps and bounds better than what we had coming into last season. I think that the White Sox are probably still close-ish to a 500 team on paper. I think they need to do a little bit more to get in that top tier. Probably it's really tough for me between the Tigers and the Royals after that. I think the Tigers have, with their bullpen help and acquiring Zimmerman, they've probably put themselves pretty close-ish to the White Sox, and the Royals are right there as well. I don't know. Gun to my head, I guess I'd go Indians, Twins, White Sox, Tigers, Royals. Sorry, Kansas City. I just don't believe in you.
The defending world champions. I don't believe in you guys.
Yeah, they're not so good.
Until the sixth inning. And then they're...
through the sixth inning.
when the sixth inning comes around, when they face the starting pitcher for the third time through the order, then they become world champions. It's pretty much what happened to the playoffs. They score the majority of their runs from the sixth inning and later. I guess if I had to rank, I don't see enough offense from the Indians. Lindor, obviously very good. Jason Kipnis woke up big time in 2015. You still have Carlos Santana there. But after those three, I'm not seeing a whole lot of offense.
Yan Gomes is a pretty good hitting catcher.
He's got to stay healthy,
though. Chunk of time last year. Yeah, that's the thing with him. He needs to stay on the field, but he's honestly there's only a short list of catchers I'd take in the game over Yan Gomes given help.
Gotcha. Well, speaking of health, Yadier Molina is going to have to go through another second hand surgery. He may miss all of spring training. Just more bad news if you're a St. Louis Cardinals fan. If I had to rank them, I'm going to go with a little bit of a surprise. I think to you, maybe not that much because you had them second, but I would peg the Twins right now as probably the early favorites for the American League Central, just because I think they're the most well-balanced team out of the five teams. They don't have the biggest question marks. I think every team in the AL Central and every team right now has question marks because we're still in the offseason, of course. But I think the Tigers, they still have a big question mark even after citing Jordan Zimmerman on how the back end of that rotation is going to look. Is Anibal Sanchez fully healthy? Can he get back to his old self? Because he most certainly was not last year. And they still have to find a number four, and they have to find a number five starter. And can Justin Verlander continue to get back on track, or is he going to dip down below his level of play? The Kansas City Royals, we already mentioned, they have holes everywhere on their 25-man roster right now that they have to patch up after teams signed away players from the World Championship team. The Indians, I mentioned before, the outfield is decimated. And for the White Sox, I mean, it's great to add Todd Frazier. However, if your outfield is still Adam Eaton, Melky Cabrera, and Avisail Garcia, that's not a very good defensive outfield. And hopefully Melky bounces back. But after what Jim wrote and what he got from as far as the Bill James annual review of the season and all those metrics in which, you know, he swings like a power hitter, but his RBI, as far as opportunities, when he's in an RBI situation, he hits like a slap hitter where he just gets singles. He doesn't hit much for power, and he's a horrible base runner, and he's not very good defensively. I mean, in reality, there's not much, if anything, that Avisail Garcia did well, and that's still a black hole as far as the nine guys that are in the field, and you're still going with a unreliable solution at shortstop for the White Sox. So the White Sox also do have black holes, but I guess it goes to the premise if you're a fan. And this is why White Sox fans have hope, and this is why White Sox fans are going on social media pretty much begging the team to go out and continue to make moves like acquiring Todd Frazier and even going one step further and signing a big ticket outfielder. Every team in the American League Central is a little screwed up right now. And if you go out and you spend the money and you fix that problem in one of the corner outfield spots, then all of a sudden it's realistic. Maybe way more realistic than last year. I mean, I think we all were hopeful the White Sox were going to be able to compete for the American League Central, but I don't think a lot of White Sox fans were expecting to win the division. I think we were all hoping that they would be above 500 to compete for the wild card. But right now, just stacking as far as the teams, the Twins are the ones that don't have like the biggest question mark out of everyone. I think their question mark is starting pitching, which I know they've been trying to address as much as possible. But offensively, I think they're going to be one of the better teams in the division. So I go Twins 1. I'm still going to go Royals 2, Penoles. Lorenzo Cain, Hosmer, Moustakas, Escobar, Salvi Perez.
Escobar. Oh, so not just anybody gets tossed into, these are guys.
I knew you would get a kick out of that. So, I mean, that's a good core they've got. That's a good core. And, you know, you cannot question the genius of Ned Yost as manager.
You can't. The more you question it, the better his results get.
I know. It's just crazy. So, Twins 1, Royals 2, White Sox 3, Tigers 4, and Indians 5. I think the Indians are in some trouble.
We put the Indians at the complete opposite ends of the spectrum there.
We did. We don't have the same confidence level. I know they have a fantastic starting pitching staff. And quite frankly, they may be the best starting staff unless they trade Carrasco for an outfielder. I know I've been keep bringing it up, and you hate the idea of a Cubs-Indians deal where Jorge Soler comes to the Indians for Carlos Carrasco. I know Moore would have to be involved, but that would be the centerpiece of the deal. And
that could be a centerpiece. I'd give you that.
Yeah, I just
could be a centerpiece with something else nice coming with, though. He doesn't carry standalone, especially after this past season. I think that there's too many questions about him for him to really be like we got this prize and not much else.
Right.
Carrasco's already a star.
Is he though? After 1 year.
Yes.
Okay. You're very definitive.
And a year and a half, really. He did great down the stretch at the end of the previous year. And he's always had the stuff, and I think that he's really shown that he's become able to harness it. And, you know, a guy like that, I mean, for me, I might value proven guys more than most, but I think that the fact that he's actually been able to showcase his talent on the big stage and really be, a well above average major league player, that speaks volumes over whatever raw talent Jorge Soler might possess.
Gotcha. Well, I know we're completely opposite ends of the Indians, so as you always say, it's probably going to be in the middle. So the Indians are probably the third best team.
Probably.
Right now, as it works. I mean, you can't doubt. I mean, Terry Francona gets a lot out of his players, and it's been quite impressive on how well the Indians have played despite the amount of injuries that they've had, and it's a very impressive job that Francona's done as far as trying to keep that team even keel. And I guess that's going to be the final question for our show here tonight, Penoles, and it goes back to probably one of the chief concerns for the White Sox, and that topic is Robin Ventura. The White Sox have made significant upgrades on the roster from last year. Is it enough? We don't know yet. Most likely it's not. But with the way that the team is currently constructed, I believe, and I guess it's the first point, do you believe this team is much better off than the team that started 2015 last year based on last offseason's moves?
To be quite honest with you, I feel like it's about the same as where it was last year. We had because now we know that Melky is kind of – we have a year of Melky taking a step back, and we have a year of LaRoche that just completely diving off a cliff. Alexi Ramirez isn't here anymore. And now there's just a complete gaping hole at shortstop. So I feel pretty close to the same about this team right now as I did coming into the previous season.
Okay.
It's pretty close.
Okay. So with that being said, last year's team had some expectations to them and they fell right on their face to start the year. And they bounced back. They were able to get back to 500 in May, but then they fell on their face again in the month of June. Going into spring training, with the moves that they made, with Robin Ventura going into his final year of his contract, I mean, how long of a leash does Robin Ventura truly have? And I know I'm kickstarting this conversation a lot sooner than I think I wanted to. I wanted to hold back this conversation going to spring training, but fans really now are turning around and putting a lot more pressure on Robin Ventura. Like, okay, got a better third baseman, got a better second baseman, didn't give up any of the starting pitchers. The bullpen's really good. Yes, you have a hole at shortstop. Yes, you still have a hole at right field. But we expect better. And with this being his last year of his deal, if the White Sox start 2016 four games in Oakland, so they start on the road, how big of a leash are you giving Robin Ventura for the 2016 season?
Probably not very big. I think that Rick Renteria is evidence of that. I think that that's kind of the – I think the White Sox maybe want him in-house.
Mm-hmm.
If they do replace Robin, they could say they hired from within to replace him. I feel like that's very White Sox. But I don't think his leash is particularly long, and certainly a missed postseason or a losing season is probably spelled the end for him. I don't know that they, unless things turn really south, that they would fire him mid-year. I guess I don't really know what purpose that would serve.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that unless this season is particularly successful, this is the end of the line for him.
How would you want him to handle spring training? Because this is a question that Jim handled on Monday's podcast. You know, don't want this to be like a country club, you know, because Robin Ventura is such a player's coach, and being a former player, he understands as far as getting ready for the season and spring training. But do you think that there needs to be a higher sense of urgency for the White Sox in spring training just because they weren't even close to meeting expectations last year?
I don't think he should change a damn thing. I mean, if the players like him and the players respect him, that's pretty much good enough for that aspect of the job. I'm not somebody who believes that yelling at grown men will make them perform better. I just think that that's kind of nonsense. Everybody has enough motivation to do well on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, if Robin really wants to send a message to a player, he can do so via the lineup card. He doesn't really need to be a drill sergeant or anything like that. And plus, that would require him being somebody who he's really not. I mean, I just don't see him as that guy, and I don't know that he would be necessarily respected as that guy.
Gotcha. No, I agree. I mean, can't yell at Bryce Harper to run faster down first baseline, and you got to choke him, right? I mean, that's what you got to
exactly.
do today.
you got to get your hands dirty in order to make that work.
I just feel like Ventura's leash is pretty short. But again, Rick Hahn does have a lot of confidence in Ventura's ability. So let's see. I mean, Ventura hasn't had very good. He didn't have very good teams. He didn't have a very good team in 2014. The 2013 team just fell apart on him during the season. But here we are, the White Sox again after making some moves in 2015. As far as before the 2015 season, last year again 1 year later, the White Sox make a couple big moves in trades, acquiring Brett Lowry from the Oakland Athletics and acquiring Todd Frazier from the Cincinnati Reds. Before we sign off here, P. Knowles, I guess, who do you expect to sign next or the big transaction that either the White Sox will make or a Major League Baseball? Do you feel like any of those three, Cespedes, Upton, or Gordon, will sign before Christmas?
I think that odds are at least one of them will sign before Christmas. I just think that there's enough time between now and then for something to get done, even though it doesn't really feel like anything's imminent.
Yeah, I thought the market would be going much faster after Hayward signed, but it hasn't. To me, it felt like it moving pretty slow. Not as fast as the starting pitchers. I mean, when Price signed, then Greinke quickly signed, was about a week later. So I don't know. I guess timeline-wise, we're right on par. So I think the next free agent to sign, I'm going to go with Justin Upton. I think Upton's the next one to be signed.
That is actually kind of the way I was leaning. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, I think some, it depends on who you are. I think some perceive Cespedes to be the next best. Some perceive Upton to be. So I don't really know which one will set the market for the rest of them. But I could see something getting done with Upton. I think I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, definitely visit SouthsideSox.com tomorrow morning, as Jim Margulis will have more, as he'll be writing his morning column about Todd Frazier and the impact as far as the White Sox. And again, what is next? I think that's what is on everyone's mind now for the White Sox. Nothing is out of the realm of possibility. Hopefully that asterisk would be money. We'll see if the White Sox are willing to spend any. But he's Patrick Nolan. P-Noles, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time to be on.
Absolutely. Great to be on.
You can follow P-Noles on Twitter at @SSS_P-Noles. I highly recommend it. And that will do it for this episode of Southside Sox Live. Thank you so much for listening, whether you're listening on Mixler.com/Southside Sox. This is our live channel. Or you are listening live through the player on SouthsideSox.com. Again, our next, as far as the season premiere of the Southside Sox podcast, is scheduled for February 1st, 2016, as we'll recap all the happenings at SoxFest in late January, and be on the lookout for possibly another emergency podcast if the White Sox do make another big move. You could follow me on Twitter at @SSS_JoshNelson. You could follow Southside Sox on Twitter at @SouthsideSox. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/SouthsideSox. Southside Sox Live is a production of SouthsideSox.com, an SB Nation community site for the Chicago White Sox. Alongside Patrick Nolan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening.